Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome to Talking Eds. I'm Ola Pavluk, your host for today's show. Today we're going to discuss social movements in Malta and around the world. For our panel today, we welcome Hannah Bland from the Talking Eds team. Hannah is an activist with an experience of volunteering for a number of NGOs of different sizes and in different contexts. She has a keen interest in grassroots volunteer-led movements and campaigns. Hannah has been involved in student and environmental movements, and more recently with punks and anarchists outside the formal civil society sector in Myanmar. Welcome to the studio, Hannah.
Hi, thanks.
In our studio with us today, we have two guests, Dr. Michael Briguglio from University of Malta and Eric Castillo representing the movement Graffiti. Dr. Michael Briguglio is a lecturer at the University of Malta, and his research interests include social movements, policy making, and environmental organizations. He's also a Green Councillor and has been involved in civil society and environmental work since the 90s. He's also a co-founder of Front Harsian ODZ. Eric Castillo is here today representing Movement Graffiti, a local Maltese pressure group which focuses on bringing together social issues such as human rights, equality, and environmentalism. Eric has taken part in many actions over the course of the past year, including environmental and feminist initiatives. Michael and Eric, welcome you both.
Thank you.
Right, so shall we start with Movement Graffiti, Eric? What is it?
Well, Movement Graffiti is basically a horizontal organization. We're based with volunteers. Our goals normally are representing leftist ideas, and our main goal is putting pressure on be it government, be it local councils, is putting pressure on the authorities on certain issues that we find would need to be improved or changed.
Well, how do you do that?
With many different ways. Sometimes it's issuing a statement, a press statement, but we feel that most of the times that is not enough. Mm-hmm. And most of the times it's either through a direct action or through organizing protests and these sort of activities to pass on our message more broadly to the people, and by that we're applying more pressure to the authorities.
Mm-hmm. And what are the current issues that are being discussed? What are the main issues that are being discussed by Movement Graffiti, or perhaps in your experience, Michael, what are the main issues?
Well, there are some issues in Malta which have been around for quite some time, such as protection of the environment. Mm-hmm. It has been a main social movement issue for some decades now. In more recent years, there has been a wave of civil rights activism on LGBTIQ issues. Malta had the referendum on divorce, which might sound a little bit odd for the rest of the world. But in 2011, there was a referendum on divorce, and many argue, and I agree with this perspective, that when this divorce on referendum passed, the Yes movement won, it encouraged other activists in the field of civil rights to speak up, such as the LGBTIQ movement. More recently, there has been another wave of civil society engagement on governance in Malta. It has become a major issue. When there was the global Panama Papers issue, which exposed secret bank accounts and a lot of shady deals and so forth, Malta was heavily implied in this, and governance became another major issue which civil society has been concerned about. For example, the Malta Today newspaper, which holds social scientific surveys every so often, holds surveys on where it asks people what are the major issues. And in one of its most recent surveys, corruption went really up among the chief concerns of Maltese people. So, yes, I think this is a more recent wave, the wave of activism on governance. But I think if you look at, from a broader perspective, if you look at the past 25 years, for example, I think one issue which has been consistently on the agenda is the environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite interesting that is that a lot of work of movement graffiti is focusing on putting pressure under government. How about the public and public awareness, public perception? Are social movements involved in educating the public, raising awareness as well?
Well, through for movement graffiti, while we are putting pressure on government, we are also educating the public on the issue we are against. Be it example, we take the case of Manuel Island, where graffiti was heavily involved in. There, we're educating the public how long this area has been closed off, why has it been closed off, why it shouldn't be closed off to the public. Basically, we'll be along the campaign of adding pressure for the government to open, we're educating the local people on why they should be in support of us.
Mm-hmm. And how do you reach people then?
There are many ways. Again, it's Facebook. In the case of Manuel Island, we were also out in the street, passing out flyers, informing the locals. Another time, we were passing out flyers in the Manuel Island Open Day, which was organized by MIDI. There are various ways where you can inform the people. Another platform is something like today.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the question I want to ask you is maybe a bit divisive. How important is dissatisfaction with the state in actually mobilizing the people? Dissatisfaction with the state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that question is a very heavy question, and it can be interpreted in various ways. Mm-hmm. If you look at Malta, for example, Malta has one of the highest voting rates in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that people are dissatisfied with the state, or I wouldn't say that people want to change the system. Of course, there are people who want to change the system, but we're speaking about the masses, so to speak. I do not see a revolutionary consciousness, if one may put it that way. But what I would see is that people are more aware of certain issues. Now, there are people who are aware of single issues. For example, in my interpretation, the LGBTIQ movement in Malta has been very, very effective, very effective. In fact, Malta was a laggard in Europe on LGBTIQ rights, and now it's one of the best performers when it comes to legislation. However, the LGBTIQ movement has not really opened up to other issues. So the LGBTIQ movement has been very much focused, successfully, to introduce certain rights in Malta. But that doesn't mean that there's dissatisfaction with the state. It's just a single issue, or perhaps not a single issue, but its concern is on that area. There are instances where organizations, Movement Graffiti is one of them actually, where organizations have worked with other organizations on a plurality of issues. But again, I wouldn't say that necessarily reflects dissatisfaction with the state. Perhaps it would reflect eagerness to change things on specific issues, or to have a more open type of governance. And I would say that civil society has been a key player in Malta to speak up. I mean, in the past years, I would say we have seen a wave of civil society organizations speaking on various issues, and very often civil society organizations have also produced their own media. As Eric rightly mentioned, he mentioned Facebook. Malta is one of the countries where Facebook is really used. Everybody is on Facebook in Malta. And social movements and other civil society organizations have really made good use of Facebook. Also, civil societies, I would say, has a very high degree of representation in the mainstream media compared to other countries. You would see, for example, Movement Graffiti, which is a relatively small organization, but it has a big impact in the media. You see it very often in the media. The same can be said for other NGOs. I would say that I wouldn't relate this to some dissatisfaction with the system or with the state, but I would say that there is a wave of consciousness for change in specific areas. Now, whether this wave will grow or will lead to something else is something which is very difficult to predict.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think, Hannah?
From my context, I was thinking dissatisfaction of the state is quite important in mobilizing people, but that's not in Malta, but in the UK and also in Myanmar. because I've been working with like anarchists and punks and things, I think the kind of anger with the system not working for people pushes people to take action themselves. And I think sometimes if you believe that the state's going to sort out the problems of the world, then you can just sit back and relax. Whereas if nothing's working, then you need to take the matter into your own hands and do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. I think to a certain extent you need that people are angry at the state to actually mobilize in a large number. But that mobilization will then take a different context. If you mobilize in a massive amount, the struggle has changed from the Maltese context where we have a small participation, and you're basically fighting for the politician to adopt adopt what you are proposing. When it's a mass movement like abroad or in any other issue, the struggle changes They have to agree, because there's a mass movement that has actually come out for this change. Sometimes it's easier when you have those masses, mm-hmm. but to a certain extent it can be harder as well, as you have the masses, but then the message can be varied because of so many people with different ideas and different ways of achieving the goal.
Mm, that actually reminds me, recently I was speaking to one of our colleagues, Kainat Khurshid, who is an activist and educator from Pakistan, and she said that from her perception, often civil society in Pakistan is largely ignored by the state, but then the state actually caves in a lot of the time. They have managed to influence constitution, for example, on the issue of organ donors or forced organ donors. So how about this interaction between state and actually civil society being able to influence the decisions at this level? Do you feel it's similar in your contexts?
Well, yeah. In Malta, I actually have done a lot of research in this, and I've been active myself. And I think there are areas where civil society has been very, very effective in mobilizing people and in influencing state decisions. Sometimes on areas like, as I said, as LGBTIQ, right? Sometimes on single issues. For example, in the environment, it's a mixed bag. There were instances where civil society managed to achieve substantive impacts. That is, they managed, for example, to stop a major development. Mm-hmm. And usually that was the case when there were broad alliances. And there were other issues where civil society perhaps did not manage to have a substantive impact. For example, there was a referendum on bird hunting in spring in 2015, where the environmental lobby lost. However, at the same time, the environmental movement was effective in sensitizing public opinion, which is an educational process in itself. So that is very important. It depends on what type of impacts we're speaking about. There could be substantive impacts where you change a law, or you introduce a policy, or you change a government, or I don't know. But there could also be sensitizing impacts, which are more cultural, which are more educational, which are more long-term. Mm-hmm. And very often, to have substantive impacts, you need an infrastructure of sensitizing impacts first. That is the culture, the long road, the cultural process. I would say that, in a Gramscian sense, I would say both are important. You need to be active for the here and now, for substantive things to change, which is very important. I think the short term is very important. Sometimes it tends to be ignored by some, and sometimes others emphasize this too much. But the long term is also important as well. The long road of conscientization, as Paulo Freire would say, perhaps. But then again, these have to interact. As to mention two other scholars who I think are very important here, Ernesto Laclau and Chantal Mouffe. If you really want to change things in a broader sense, you need a hegemony, which means it is the people who change things. It's useless being five mm-hmm. people in a room and having all the greatest views in the world, but then you're not at one with the people. But on the other hand, to manage to have a broad alliance of people who agree on how things should be done, there have to be some compromises. Mm-hmm. So this is the constant struggle, even within an activist himself or herself, how your views and what you really would aspire for can be transmitted and can interact with what other people want. That is an everyday struggle.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll come back to this discussion after the break, because I think there's quite a lot still there to unpack. So we'll break for our music right now. Eric, would you like to tell us what song you have chosen for today?
I chose Fabrizio D'André, Canzone di Maggio. Basically, I chose this song as it represents the social struggle a lot of people have passed through, and it gives them more idea of what the 1st of May actually represents.
Thank you.
Anche se il nostro maggio ha fatto a meno del vostro coraggio, se la paura di guardare vi ha fatto chinare il mento, se il fuoco ha risparmiato le vostre 1100, anche se voi vi credete assolti, siete lo stesso coinvolti. E se vi siete detti, non sta succedendo niente, le fabbriche riapriranno, arresteranno qualche studente, convinti che fosse un gioco a cui avremmo giocato poco, provate pure a credervi assolti, siete lo stesso coinvolti.
Welcome back to Talking Eds. In today's discussion, we have Michael Briguglio, Eric Castillo and Hannah Bland. Before the break, we have been talking about how social movements and civil society interacts with the state. Hannah, you have worked with punks and anarchists in Myanmar. What is your experience there like?
I think it's pretty different than what we've been hearing about in Malta. I get the impression that there's a lot of like alliances and support, and you have quite a strong ability to change systems in some circumstances. In Myanmar, it seems like a bit different. There's not that many activists. I think it's a smaller group, and a part of that is through fear. Like the punks and anarchists that I was working with, their work was quite dangerous, and they would disappear. Some people would disappear, and we would never see them again. I remember there's not so much like direct action. I think that's why it's more, they're not safe to do that, a lot of the direct action. I remember some of my anarchist friends tried to put on like a lecture, just in kind of a private space on capitalism in Myanmar. And, there was like police everywhere outside watching them. Everybody has to mask up for everything. And so it's that whole kind of danger aspect of it, an anonymous aspect, I think makes it less, appealing for mm-hmm. the public. And then mm-hmm. that's also a barrier, because they don't get as much support in that area. So I think that would be a bit different because of this danger in the state.
So in that kind of environment, I'm assuming that the chances of these groups to actually influence the state or any kind of decisions are next to none.
Well, I don't know. It might be changing. Mm-hmm. This is another problem with social movements sometimes is the lack of alliance between them. So I was also working with like the National Youth Congress, and they were dissatisfied with the state and sometimes resistant to working with the state, but they were more seen as a more like legitimate group, and they could use like community spaces for their education projects and things like that. And I think they have more influence and they're more recognized. Whereas like the punks and anarchists, they don't want to work with the National Youth Congress because they disagree on basic like certain things on how they're working with the state and how they work with people. And so I think like sometimes, you know, the left is fragmented because mm-hmm. of criticizing each other and not, yeah. So I think like some groups in Myanmar could make a difference potentially, like, but if there was greater alliance, that would be mm-hmm. really great also.
Mm, that kind of echoes this other fragmentation in Malta as well, where you were saying that there are some alliances, but there's also some fragmentation.
There's a mix of both, really. You mm-hmm. have instances where, for example, between 1999 and 2004, there was a broad coalition. I was active in it, called the Front Against the Golf Course. There was a massive golf course project, and there were some political representatives from the Greens, for example. There were social movement organizations like Movement Graffiti and others. There were church organizations. There were farmers organizations. So it was a very broad alliance. Mm-hmm. Another, the Front Herzénau de Zét, which I am active in 2015 organized the biggest environmental protest in Malta. There were about 4,000 people, which is very much for Malta. And one reason why I would interpret that there were so many people was that, first of all, there was a lot of anger on a project, on a private university project on environmentally sensitive land. So the issue of emotions comes in, which I think is very, very important when we're speaking of social movements and politics, the emotional aspect. So I see emotions as a positive thing, not as a negative thing. There was a lot of anger, but there was also a very broad alliance to build up the momentum for people to attend this huge demonstration. We met and lobbied with various groups, various parties, and if we hadn't done that, all those people wouldn't have been there. So yes, there's some compromise has to be made. You have to find the language, a discourse which resonates with the public consciousness. Then again, how much can you compromise? This is all, as I was saying previously, there's always this issue. If you compromise too much, you might lose your soul, so to speak. But then if you don't compromise at all, you might be in your own echo chamber or in your own bubble. So this is the constant interaction which social movements face. Then again, in a small society like Malta, we have our own circumstances, which, as I said, for example, small social movements are fairly well represented in the mass media. But then we have our own particularities. For example, Malta is a society which is very binary. It's us against them. You find this in politics, you find this in village feasts, which are very important. You find this even in social movements. You find peak between people who perhaps are saying the same thing, but they don't work together because of various issues. It could be character. So here we're going into the realm of the psychology of social movements, which is very important as well. And in a small society like Malta, there are things which can work in favor of you, like building networks, but there are things which can work against you, like this binary, this peak of people who agree on issues but don't work together because of other reasons.
Well, another issue that I wanted to raise is social movements as learning spaces. How do social movements act as learning spaces for the public and for the activists themselves?
Well, first, I guess for activists themselves, I have learned so much through activism. I think I've learned much more than I have at school or even at university through activism in terms of how to organize and learning about the strength of people and like a kind of the belief in one's capacity to make a change and how to have meetings and how just everything, like working with people and what works and what doesn't work. So I think I've learned a lot about people and about myself and about change and how that happens. So I really value them as a learning space. So even if my action is not getting to the ends that I wanted to, I see the value in it just for that, from personal gain. But in terms of the public, I would say it depends on the social movement and the action that we use. I think there usually most social movements have some kind of aspect of education happening, like campaigning and workshops or anything within their group or outwardly, because a lot of people want to, as we said earlier, we need to change mindsets in order to create change. So there's that kind of educational aspect. There's so many ways to do that. You can do that with theater or art. Or I think that the main principles of educating in the public is it has to be accessible for people and it needs to, like emotions, you were saying, emotions so important. I think that that's so important to challenge the kind of apathy in society. So I would say educational initiatives that stir emotions and are maybe fun or interesting can be great.
I could see you nodding there a lot, Eric. So so what was your experience as an activist for you as a learner?
Learning, I mean, me personally, I learned a lot. I've met with a lot of different people, even just joining graffiti, I've met people with different ideology than me who might have been more extreme than me or less extreme than me in their ideology. I've learned more how government works, how to organize people, and as well you learn from the people you meet, from the cause you're fighting. Example, when we were fighting the master plan I've met with a lot of locals in Pacheville, which had totally different context through the fight of Manuel Island. I've met people who have lived in Pacheville for all their life and have explained to me their struggle and what it means that they're losing their house. And you meet people and their stories, and even just that knowledge enriches your ideas and enriches on how you think on certain issues. As for informing the public, I mean, I agree totally. You can inform the public with workshops and with these things, which we tend to do as graffiti. We also have film nights, which most of their teamed to what we do to inform the public. And also, I mean, sometimes I consider a direct action that can be as well as informing the people. For Manuel Island example, the direct action was opening the gate, where we informed the people that, listen, this area is by law your area and you can use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one question for the very end before we wrap up. So what do you think are the main strengths of social movements nowadays, being actually grassroots and volunteer-led? How important is it for them to be grassroots and volunteer-led?
I think this is very important because it offers a degree of flexibility without being trapped in a bureaucratic structure, where sometimes you find bigger organizations where the bureaucracy becomes the end in itself. Like you might be, for example, an official in a major trade union, but your main interest is keeping your job. Mm-hmm. In the social movement, I'm not saying that there aren't interests, that there are always some form of interest, and interests are not necessarily material interests. But I think the value of altruism in social movements tends to be very high. The belief you have in a cause, I think that's very important. But again, the main challenge I see for social movements, both as an activist and as a researcher, is how different languages, so to speak, can interact together. That's a big issue. So how an anarchist who is active against the extension of an airport runway, for example, there were issues in England, Heathrow or Manchester, can interact with a middle-class resident with conservative views who is also against that airport extension. How do these two languages interact? That's a big challenge. But I think social movements, various social movements, have shown that they are flexible and capable enough to do this effectively.
Okay, I think we'll have to wrap up on this positive note. Thank you all for your discussion today. Thank you to our team member, Hannah Bland, and to our special guests, Dr. Michael Briguglio and Eric Castillo, for sharing their thoughts and experiences with us today. Thank you also to our technician, Samuel. The Talking Ed series is available online at multiuniversitybroadcasting.com. Thank you for listening today, and goodbye.